nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
And we're very fortunate to have Filou Rafiza from MIT presenting today. She's recently gone through this process in deploying the MIT virtual source model. So she's going to share the lessons learned and experiences and guide us through that submission process. I'm just going to say a few words and then I'll turn it over to Filou. So today's speaker is Filou Rafiza. Filou received her BS degree from IIT Kanpur. She then did her master's and her PhD, both from Georgia Tech, working on, as I recall, on interconnection issues related to devices that use alternative state variables. She's now a postdoc in the Microsystems Technology Lab at MIT, and her research interests are broadly in nanoelectronic devices and interconnects and solutions to the big challenges we face in these technologies. So we are going to turn control over to Filou. We'll ask those of you who are logging in to mute your microphones and save your questions until the end. So Filou, in order of, in the interest of just simplifying the logistics, when you get done with the presentation, I'd ask you just to stop and take questions and rather than turning it back to me.
Hello, everyone. I hope you all can see my desktop now. And welcome to the workshop on lessons learned from MIT Virtual Source release. Before I get started, I'd like to thank Dr. Jeffrey Corum from Analog Devices, Ujjwal Radhakrishnan from MIT, and Susan Stone from Purdue University for all of their help and support that they've provided to me as I went through this whole process. So getting started, this talk will focus on three things. I'll begin with the MVS 101 package that is now uploaded on the NanoHub website. In part two of the talk, I'll go over a checklist and guidelines for model release. In part three, I'll talk about good practices for writing Verilog A models. Now, the bulk of my talk will be focused on parts two and three. I'll also briefly go over some of the updates that we've implemented in MVS 101 and some of the open issues that we hope to address in a future model release. Of course, we can take questions at the end, or if there are any doubts or any questions, suggestions that you guys have, you can always stop me in between, and we can talk about it. So let's get started with the MVS package on NanoHub. So MVS stands for MIT Virtual Source. It's a transistor model that gives currents and charges as functions of terminal voltages. The picture over here is a transistor with all of its terminals labeled. G, B, D, S, G is the gate, B is the body, D and S are the drain and the source, respectively. We also have the channel access region resistances, RD and RS. This model basically gives us the current flowing from drain to the source as a function of various terminal voltages. And in this model, the gate current and the body current are both equal to zero. In addition, this model also gives us information on the partition channel charges, QS, QD, QB, QG, as functions of various terminal voltages. So the current release package that is uploaded on NanoHub contains a lot of different files. The first is related to MATLAB. We have a model implementation, a model exerciser that is basically used to test the sanity of your model. We have a numerical parameter extractor. In the Verilog A-related files, we have the model implementation pretty much the same way as is done in MATLAB. Here we also have some simple test benches for testing out circuits like inverters and ring oscillators. This is a good place to test and demonstrate your model capability for circuit and even system level analysis. Then we have the experimental data for model calibration. The experimental data basically goes into your numerical parameter extractor, and it gives us the unknowns in the model. So every model has a lot of empirical parameters, and experimental data calibration is needed to obtain physically meaningful and realistic values for those unknown parameters. We also have a model manual. These are the four basic components of the package. In addition, we also have an update log that you will also need to provide whenever you make an update into your in your model. We provided an update log for the current model that is there on NanoHub. The current model is MVS 101. The previous one was MVS 100. We also have a license agreement that basically governs all of the previous release package components. The link to the model on NanoHub is given here, and I want to thank Mark and Lynn for getting the wiki for model release checklist alive. It's pretty useful, and I'd recommend going through this checklist before you release your own needs-compatible compact model. Moving on to part two of the talk, which is related with checklist and guidelines for model release. Here is a quick checklist for model release. This is basically a recap of the package components that I presented earlier. The table shows the various components related with MATLAB, Verilog K, experimental data, model manual. I have all the associated files and the requirements for each of these components. In addition, we have the CMC license agreement, and we also need an update log if you make changes to your model. Now, in the next few slides, I'll talk about each of these different components in detail. The MATLAB model file is basically a .m file that contains equations describing the physics of the model. It's important that you have a model header which states what the model returns. In our case, for MVS model, we have currents and charges, so we state that this is what our model is returning. We also need to talk about the range of the model validity. If there is a range of bias for which your model is not valid, please make a note of that in the model header. Point C is the date the model was last updated and by whom. I recommend doing this because it's important for you to go back and debug your code. It's important to add adequate comments so that someone who downloads your model file can understand the code, and also it's easier for you to go back and debug the file. There also needs to be a parameter for model version, which is basically the CMC convention for assigning versions to a model and all of its subsequent updates. For MVS 1.0.0, we have a variable called version that is set equal to 1.00. For MVS 1.0.1, we have a variable version that is set equal to 1.01. In addition, please ensure that your model file name must match the module name. This is particularly important for Verilog K when you're actually writing a circuit netlist and trying to invoke your model in that. And I'll talk about this later on when we go into Verilog A. So here is a snippet from MVS 1.0.1. This is how the model file actually begins. So you can see that we've named the model file as MVS-SI101.m. You can understand it's very easy to follow. MVS is the MIT virtual source. Silicon stands that the model is only valid for silicon, and 101 is the version number. We also have a model header here with appropriate information. If you read the model header, it says that it's valid. It's a symmetrical short channel MOSFET model, and the version is 1.0.1. Additionally, we also point out that this model returns the log of the drain current. I'll talk about why we are returning the log of the drain current and not just the drain current when I go into the parameter extractor routine. We also make a note of the range of the gate voltage when this model is valid. And most importantly, we also have a timestamp here, which shows that the model was originally implemented by Dimitri way back in 2010. Yes, this is an old model, and it has undergone several modifications since then. The latest modification was implemented by me on September 19th. This is how a header in a needs-compatible compact model MATLAB file should look like. Let's talk about the CMC convention for model versioning. I know that there is a bigger document for this somewhere, but I'm just going to summarize whatever is contained in that bigger document. So every model should have a version number, dot subversion number, dot revision number, where all of these numbers in angle brackets are integers. Model version number is updated whenever you make a major model formulation change. Basically, you change the physics of the model, which makes it backward incompatible with the previous release, or you increase the number of parameters in your model. The subversion number is usually updated whenever there is a minor model formulation change. And every time you make a model version update, this number will be reset. And subversion number is usually updated whenever you do something to improve runtime efficiency. However, you do not introduce any new parameters in your model. And the last number to be updated is the revision number, which is basically the same set of equations for the model, but implemented in a different way. This corresponds only to minor bug fixes, such as implementing smoothing functions and numerical measures to improve the convergence in your code, or restructuring your code to make it look better, such as proper alignment and proper indentation. This revision number update does not change model formulation. And if there is a major model formulation, you should consider changing the subversion number or a model version number. Moving on to the second part of the MATLAB-related files, we have the model exerciser, which basically plots current, charges, capacitances as functions of terminal voltages in the case of MVS. So what model exerciser basically does is that it's the first file that can test the sanity of your MATLAB model implementation. In our case, we're also computing the first and second derivatives of current. And like I mentioned earlier, every model has a certain set of unknown parameters, which we call as empirical parameters. So if your model has those empirical parameters, make sure that you have either run your parameter extractor first, or you're using some reasonable value to plot of your model file. So as I was talking about the model exerciser, so this is how we've implemented the model exerciser for our MVS model. But it can always be tweaked to plot various other quantities of interest, such as the derivatives of capacitances. Now, it's very important that you comment your file properly, because someone who wants to download this and tweak it and change it according to their requirements, they should be able to do it. I cannot ever overemphasize the importance of properly commenting your files. Moving on to the parameter extractor. So the parameter extractor that we've implemented is basically a nonlinear optimization routine in MATLAB, which uses the built-in least square curve fit routine, which is the LSQ curve fit in MATLAB. Now, there are plenty of other nonlinear optimization techniques and routines that exist in literature that you can use for your particular model. And if you want to be more innovative, you can implement and write your own optimization routine. What the routine does is it extracts selected parameters in the model upon calibration with experimental data. For MVS, we have data sets from Intel for N-type channels, 32 nanometer and 45 nanometer gate length. People who are familiar with optimization problems know that these problems or these routines work when the initial guess is very robust. What I mean by that is that you need to provide an educated initial guess, which can come from some analytical method. In addition, you also need to specify lower and upper constraints on your parameters so that you can achieve physically meaningful, physically realistic results. There is a snippet from our MVS code that we've implemented. This is a basic crux of the parameter extraction script in MVS. The two lines over here, LB and UB, are the lower bound constraints and the upper bound constraints for the various parameters that we're trying to extract. And this is where the optimization routine is really called. You can see it's LSQ curve fit, and it calls our model file MVS SI 101. There's a bunch of other inputs that it takes, but most of them are related to the initial guess, the lower and upper bounds. And you can see that the experimental data that we're providing is the log of the current. And that's important because we wanted to make sure that we did a good job in obtaining parameters, even in subthreshold regime. What people can also do is if they have areas where they want more accuracy, they can partition their experimental data into two parts, part of which will be log of that data, and the other one would be the linear optimization. So those are some tricks. But before I go on, I just want to point out that none of these optimization routines is 100% accurate in giving you the absolute minima. Lots of the times, these problems can get stuck into local minima. And a good way to come out of those local minima is to implement a routine that is a combination of some linear regression analysis and a non-linear optimization. And you can also run sensitivity analysis to come out of those issues. And in our case, the good thing that happened with me was that earlier we didn't really have the extractor, and we would do a linear optimization. So we really had some good idea, good sense of what initial guesses would best suit our purposes. So we sort of never got into that problem, but I'm just warning that there are cases when you can get into those issues. So that was the last part of the MATLAB-related files. Let's move on to the Verilog-related files. We have a model file. It's a .v extension. It again contains equations describing the physics of the model. These two contain a parameter for model version, just the way we had for MATLAB model file. There is a header which contains changes and license agreement. Make sure that variable names are consistent with whatever is implemented in MATLAB. Now, I found this job particularly tedious because I don't know if there's an automated way to do this yet, but ensuring that variable names, particularly ones with mixed lower and upper cases, were consistent throughout was very hard for me, very time consuming. You also need to add adequate comments to make understanding the code better and debugging the code also. Along with your model file, you also need to include some simulation decks. For our case, we have included XSPICE and Spectre netlists for simulating simple circuits like inverters and ring oscillators shown over here on this slide. Now, this is a useful thing to do because you can demonstrate that your model actually works in a real circuit. You can demonstrate its capability for circuit and system level simulation. There are some very simple guidelines for preparing these simulation decks that I have noted here on this slide. Please note the loading scenario, the type of run, DC, AC transient, choice of input parameters, and also choice of simulator options, particularly the peculiar simulator version dependencies. We have run into a lot of simulator version issues on my end and even on Sinsu's end at Purdue when we were trying to run these netlists and they wouldn't run. And we found out that happened because of different simulator versions. So please provide a README file that shows what simulator version your netlist was tested on. In addition, you should provide simulation results to be properly documented in a PDF file that needs to go along with the rest of your package. Now, here is a snippet from MVS 101. This is a simulation deck for running the transient simulation of the inverter. You can see the header clearly mentions that this is a test bench for generating the transient response of an inverter, and there are two loading scenarios that you can consider. You can either have a constant loading at the output, or you can uncomment certain lines and have a fan out of four. I also mentioned the Spectre version over here. This is important because, like I said, we have run into a lot of issues with these simulator version dependencies. And there is some more code. And again, there is a simulator option called Cmin in Spectre, which basically adds a small capacitance from a node to ground to avoid infinitely fast transitions. When I added this on my end, everything was fine. There were no errors, no warnings, no notices, no nothing. But when Xingxu was running this, he got a warning and we didn't really like that. So I've just commented it out for now, noting that you need to check for Cmin compatibility with older Spectre versions. And there's a bunch of other info that I have commented out for now. Okay, going on to experimental data. This is an important part because this is the place where you need to make sure that your experimental data that you're using for model calibration is formatted in a way that can be read by your software. At this point, I'm not really sure if providing a nonlinear optimization routine is a requirement for NIST-compatible compact model, or if one can really provide just some linear regression analysis along with their model manual to show how they can extract parameters in a meaningful way. But in case you are providing a routine to do this, you should format your experimental data such that your software can read it or different columns represent. To make sure that you did not really steal your data from anywhere, please cite the source of the experimental data both in a README file and the model manual. I'll show you an example from our MVS code and how the parameter extracted in MVS reads data. We have the transfer curve and output curve data from Intel devices. These are three column data, which you can see. On the output curve side, you have this orange block, and I've crossed it. And the reason was that the data that was provided to us from Intel had a finite value, a little finite value of ID for VDS equal to 0 volts. Now, what the MVS model does is it gives you current equal to 0 when the drain-to-source voltage drop is 0. And my parameter extractor runs in log of ID. So, of course, log of 0 is not defined. So I had to remove this data point. In real devices, however, you can have a non-zero ID even when your VDS is equal to 0, which we don't really model in MVS. And this particular formatting of the data has been noted in the model manual. So if someone downloads my parameter extractor and wants to use the MVS code, they will know never to provide data which has VDS equal to 0 in the output curve. So those are some important things that you need to ensure that the end user can really understand how to run your code. Okay, now the model manual. This is an important part because this really brings together everything that we've implemented so far. So the manual defines your model physics, all of the equations, and an explanation of all of the variables in your model along with your units. Make sure that your variable names are consistent throughout. And I've mentioned earlier when I was talking about MATLAB model files that I particularly find this a very tedious job. Now, maybe when we go on to MOSFET, this would really not be an issue, but for now, this is an issue. The functionality of extraction routine, whether it is nonlinear optimization or whether it's a linear regression analysis, either of those needs to be provided as part of the model manual. Sample experimental data sets needs to be provided. Some basic simulation results of what your model outputs need to be provided. In our case, we have shown simple results like the drain current, the terminal charges, terminal capacitances as functions of various terminal voltages. Also make sure that you have proper references for the model physics and experiments in your model manual. Going on to license agreement, for MVS models, we are using a needs modified CMC standard license for compact models that is uploaded on the NanoHub website. I've provided a link here. For our case, the copyright of all of the package components is owned by MIT. When you are going to release your model, please check with your institute if the copyright must be owned by the model developer, that is you. So you have to ensure if you have to check with your institute before uploading a new model, whether you will be allowed to retain the copyright. In our case, MIT retains the copyright for everything that belongs to this particular model, whether it's the MATLAB file or the simulation deck, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this brings me to part three of the talk, which is related with good practices for writing Verilog in models. Now, parts of the next few slides are borrowed from the presentations given by Jeffrey Corum and Colin McAndrew in the past. Recently, an excellent presentation was given by Tianqi and Jaijeev at Purdue. So my idea over here is to share with all of you some examples of issues that I found while writing the Verilog A code for MVS and some of the traps that we've fallen into ourselves when coding the model. I'll give you a lot of examples from MVS. They're not all the traps that we fell into, but those are some important issues. And based on my experience, I've come up with a list of good practices for writing these models. Now, this list by no means is a complete comprehensive list. If you're interested in knowing more, you should probably check out some of the references that I have provided at the end of part three. So to make things simpler, I have divided good Verilog A practices into four different components. The first one is related with the look and feel of your code. The second one is related with variables. The third one is the built-in functions. And the last one is performance limits and debugging. So look and feel make debugging easier. So it's important that you write your code properly with proper indentation, proper alignment, and using meaningful variable names. It's equally important to partition your code logically, starting from initialization, followed by static quantities, then dynamic quantities, and noise. So when Tianqi gave his talk at Purdue, he did mention that even though Verilog A allows you to have contributions in the middle of your model, it's not recommended. It's better to use local variables throughout and write your contribution statements towards the end. This makes debugging the code a lot easier. So here is an example from MVS. We can see that if then else statements are properly aligned, voltages are named appropriately. You can tell that VDS is the drain to source voltage. The code is aligned at equal to sign. And fourth, we have added a block comment that tells that what follows is the definitions of voltage. Now, this may seem very trivial to you, and of course, it is very trivial. But despite the best efforts from everyone, Jeffrey, and all of the presentations that I actually went through when I was writing the code, I didn't actually do this. I mean, I did it for parts of the code, but not throughout. So even though this seems trivial, it's important that do this for all of your code. I want to share another example from MVS 100. So basically, we start with initialization. We call the constants.vms file. We call the disciplines.vms file, and we initialize. We have the module, we have the port, we declare them as electrical terminals. Then we have some code, and we have static quantities, which is the drain current in our case. Then we have the dynamic quantities, which is the channel charge. And even though I'm not showing over here, at the end, we have current contributions. So it's important that you follow this logical partitioning for your particular code. Our code doesn't include noise, but if it did, it would go after the dynamic quantities. So variables in Verilog. There are certain no-nos when it comes to variables. Avoid unused variables in the code. And also superfluous assignments. You have to be very careful with memory states, which are hidden states. It's very hard to find them out running simple TC and transient simulations. It's also important to assign proper range to your parameters. Also understand that Verilog A is a case-sensitive language, and if you're running your code in a simulator, that is not case-sensitive. Usually what the simulator would do is it would just output a warning. It's fine. You can take care of this issue by providing variable aliases, whatever works for you, but understand that this is a problem. Also, make sure variable names are identical in MATLAB script and Verilog code. I think I've repeated myself several times over here. Let me give you an example of what a superfluous assignment is. This is a little piece of code. Line 1 says that we have a variable X that we want to define as the voltage between these two nodes divided by resistance. What lines 2 through 5 do, they attempt to redefine X. So what really happens when you compile this code is that you get a diagnostic message from your compiler which says assignment to X may be superfluous. So please avoid using superfluous assignments and attempting to redefine your variables. It's not a recommended practice. Here is a snippet from MVS 100. We have different parameters, RSO, RDO, CIF, COF. And on the right-hand side, you can see that I've provided a parameter range to all of these variables. The idea is avoid garbage in, garbage out. That's a simple idea. Now, my personal experience was, okay, I when I first wrote the code, I actually did not do this. I did not provide parameter range. I was like, I don't care. But really, when I got my code reviewed by a lot of people, they told me that this is very important. And now I have this. And I'll talk about later why doing this is a good idea. Memory states. This was the trickiest part when we were writing the code because we didn't find it. And that's why they're also called hidden states, because they lead to unexpected behavior. Memory states are nothing but uninitialized variables. When your simulator starts, the variables are assigned to 0 on the first call to module, and the simulator will retain this value of the previous iteration if the variable is not assigned a value before it is used. So it's actually an unassigned variable. It's hard to find this variable in DC or transient simulation. So what I did was I wrote the code, the model, everything, made the netlist, ran the code on my end for DC and transient simulation of inverter and even the ring oscillator. I was very happy. Everything was clean. Then I sent my code to Xingshu. He had some simulator version dependencies. But other than that, the code was very clean, working nicely. Then we went to Jeffrey and asked him for his feedback on how we had done in implementing the code. The first thing he did was he ran a periodic steady state analysis with our model. And the model actually crashed, and here is what happened. It says, PSS analysis doesn't support behavioral module components with hidden states found in components. So we had a variable called psi s, which you can see in this error message, hidden state variable psi s. we actually had this and it was hidden and it was not initialized properly, because of which we couldn't run the periodic steady state analysis. We did not find this in DC and transient analysis. This bug has been fixed in 101. So make sure that you do not have unassigned variables in your code. Moving on to built-in functions. There are a lot of built-in functions that Verilog A provides, but you have to understand the compatibility issues of those built-in functions with various versions of Simulator. I'll give you a couple of examples from my experience in MVS. Also be aware of derivatives of some functions which do not exist, which have singularities like absolute of x and ddx of square root of x. And there are certain expensive functions like computing e to the power something or power of an argument. And sometimes when things are really not needed, like Verilog A block level modeling features or RF analysis in your models, you don't really need these for compact modeling. So please don't use things like transitions through last crossing absolute. Absolute is not a physical thing to do. So please avoid using these. Here is an example of incompatibility of built-in Verilog functions. So there is a function called exp and there's a function called limexp, which are totally identical. They compute e to the power of something. Limexp is better. It provides better convergence than exp. However, it comes at the cost of extra memory usage. Now, I wanted to use limexp throughout because, of course, it provides better convergence. And I was really not that careful about the extra memory issue. So I went ahead and used limexp, and it ran fine with my version of Spectre 10.1. But it fails to run with Spectre version 5.10 at Purdue. So right now, the current implementation of MVS model, whether it's 100 and 101, that's using EXP everywhere just to make sure that it's compatible with whatever people at Purdue have right now. So those are some simulator version dependencies of built-in functions that you need to be aware of. So what we've done is we've explicitly linearized EXP function above a breakpoint. This is a recommended practice that I found out after my discussions with Utwal. So what we've done here is we have argument eta, which when it's less than a large value, you implement your variable q in a certain way. When it's greater than that large value, you implement it to linearize it basically, because ln of 1 plus exp eta can be written as simply the product of two refs and eta. So this is a recommended practice, and I would suggest doing this in your model as well. Another little example from MVS 100 is evaluating the function ln. Now, these are things that I really didn't think I would get into. You know, I'm a model developer, and I usually never thought that this could be an issue. So I have this little piece of code here where I'm evaluating psi s. So there are double ln's over here, ln of 1 plus something. So when eta naught becomes a large negative value, the exponent goes to 0. So the first ln is ln of 1, which is 0. And the second ln is now trying to compute ln of 0, which can be evaluated. To be honest, when I was running this code on my end, I did not have any issue. My simulator, for some great reason, didn't show me any bug. It worked just fine. But the older Spectre version at Purdue, that did not run. It crashed. So what we did was, we did a quick fix solution here. We added a small correction to the value of 1. What we're trying to do here is we are attempting to redefine what 1 is by adding a small value, that is 1 e to the power minus 10. So when exponent of eta naught is a very tiny value, it doesn't really matter, but somehow we will try, we'll avoid getting into the ln of 0 problem that we initially got. And this quick fix did a good job for us. I'm sure that there are other elegant solutions out there to tackle this issue, but for now, this is what we've implemented in MVS 100 and even in MVS 101. The third part of this is performance limits. You should know that extra state variables impact model efficiency. Extra state variables come from voltage control side, which I've shown over here. So it's important to have contributions formulated in terms of current. So if you have a nonlinear capacitance that can be implemented either as a voltage contribution or as a current contribution, it's better to implement it as a current contribution. implementing an inductor is always a better idea to implement as a voltage contribution because you don't want to use IDT. DDT is always preferred. So this will definitely introduce an extra state variable for you. Branch DDTs will lead to extra state variables. It's better not to put the function DDT within conditional. And like I mentioned earlier, it's always better to have current contributions than voltage contributions. It's also important to consider simplified expressions wherever possible. And only truly voltage-controlled elements must be implemented with voltage contributions. These are important points. Now, this brings me to a very important part, which is collapsing nodes. And like I said earlier, that initially I didn't really assign a range to my parameters, you know. So a lot of the times what model developers do is they collapse nodes. This is a little piece of code which says, okay, when my resistance RA is positive, I want the current to be given by the voltage across these nodes divided by the resistance. And when it's zero, I want my voltage to be zero. What would happen when this resistance is too tiny? I mean, of course, the current contribution statement, the IBISI will blow up. So one way to tackle this issue is when your resistance is greater than a small value, you implement it as a current contribution. Otherwise, you implement it as a voltage contribution. Lucky for us, Verilog gives us this flexibility, but there are issues over here. The first issue is what happens when RA changes with your bias voltage, if it's not a constant thing. And there are some model interfaces for some simulators that don't allow for this. And I'm pretty positive that there are other instances where this will not work. To be honest with all of you, I haven't implemented this in MVS. I have only provided a parameter range saying my resistance R, which is the access region resistance, is a number which is positive, which is more than zero. So we only have the IBISI assignment from the top part of the code. But going forward, we need to do something about this. And Colin McAndrew has a presentation from 2008, which actually talks about a very elegant solution to handle this problem. And I recommend going through his slides to understand how to collapse nodes to improve efficiency. Debugging the code, watch for compile time warnings, and you know the other things, like when you implement a new model feature, try to test your code, use source code control, et cetera, et cetera. But what I found most helpful was to get my code checked by peers and experts. This really did the trick for me because as I discussed more and more with Jeffrey and Uzzwell, I got to know the little trivial issues that I hadn't thought would be so important for making the code better and actually releasing a needs compatible compact model. So keep talking with your peers and experts. There are plenty of useful Verilog resources available online. Here are some of the ones that I found useful. The last one is a talk given by Tianxi and Dezi. This was recently done at Purdue. And this is uploaded on the NanoHub website. The video is there. I recommend going through the talk because it talks about in more detail about some of the issues that I mentioned in the previous slides. Now, updates and open issues. So what are the changes that we have made in 101 compared to 100? So the Verilog related issues are indentation and alignment has been fixed. Yes, this was an issue for our model. It was not properly indented. It was my mistake. I didn't think that this was so necessary. And we did have a hidden variable, PsiF, which was not initialized properly. And we've initialized it properly now. We have had some unused parameters that we were not using in the code, which we forgot to remove, and I have removed them now. For MATLAB related, the model file name is changed to match with the module name. And the optimization code and the model exerciser, all of these files, more comments have been added in these files so that someone who downloads these files finds it easier to run the code. Some other general changes that have made are parameter type has been changed to PYP. Initially, I was very hesitant for using type to distinguish between N-type and P-type devices because the word TYPE is a reserved keyword in MATLAB. So I didn't want to use it, but to be consistent with whatever is out there, I went back to using TYPE. Then there was an external parameter, PyTe, that we were using in MATLAB. This was more legacy thing. We've eliminated that and instead added a junction temperature, which now computes phi t internally within the code. We've also added a license.txt file. You have to check with your institute whether you, as model developers, have the right to own these components or whether the license agreement belongs to your institute. So open issues, what we hope to address in a future release. Now, one of the things is automating the process in parameter extractor and model exerciser. So the way our parameter extractor is implemented right now is it toggles between two experimental data sets, 32 nanometer and 45 nanometer. So as an end user, what you will have to do is download the file, read every single line, and uncomment the file lines that I ask you to do for using either the 32 nanometer data or 45 nanometer data. I've shown some snippets from our code here. Now, this is a very cumbersome task because you have to read everything and make sure that you're uncommenting the right lines. And this is not just one place. The extractor calls a bunch of other files, and you have to go ahead and do this everywhere. It's really not very easy to do. And what I want to do is make more like a GUI where user can just input the data and the extractor take care of the rest of the thing. The other point is coupling MATLAB optimization with Verilog model. Now, this is something that came up in the discussion with Uchwal last week. Now, he has a gallium nitride model that's a very complex model, and he cannot implement it in MATLAB. And still, he wants to use the extraction routine because he has 35 parameters, and doing a linear regression analysis is very hard. So what do we do? The idea is that even if your model cannot fit into a MATLAB model frame, but you still want to use the extractor which has been implemented in MATLAB, we can come up with a script which basically calls your Verilog A code and then couples the Verilog A code with your extraction routine. So at some point, we will want to do this. And the third point is changing the charge dynamic model. Now, right now, the dynamic model that we have for the charges that has some issues related to the continuity of derivatives of certain capacitances, and particularly in the subthreshold regime. So once we change the physics of the model, we may have to even introduce new set of parameters. And once we do that, this will necessarily call for an update in the version number of the model because we are making a major model formulation change, changing the physics of the model. So in summary, there is a checklist guidelines wiki, which is basically a condensed version of whatever I have presented. It's available on NanoHub, and this was set up by Mark and Lynn, and they've done a great job. And of course, there is this presentation, which will be uploaded on NanoHub. You can always go through this presentation for guidelines for needs compatible compact model release. As far as Verilog A resources are concerned, there are plenty available online. Some through the NEEDS website, so go through those. They are very helpful. And this is the last thing that I wanted to talk about. And at this point, I'll be happy to take any questions.